and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Deborah Rodriguez.
It is staggering.
Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass on the devastation wrought by five major wildfires now burning in and around her city. At least five deaths are blamed on the flames. Almost 2,000 structures have been destroyed. 130,000 people under evacuation orders. Oliver Allnett is from Pacific Palisades.
I just come from my family home where my mother lives. That was burned to a crisp, so that was the initial shock value. And then I came up to my home, and same thing, it's completely dust.
Celebrities like Billy Crystal, Jamie Lee Curtis, and Ben Affleck have lost their homes. Correspondent Elise Preston is in Malibu.
Those winds are taking the embers, and they're bursting them into flames, and they're starting new fires. So even if firefighters were able to get some flames under control, the new fires would spark it right back up again.
One of those new fires is in the heart of Hollywood, where the iconic Hollywood sign is threatened. There's no relief immediately in sight. CBS meteorologist Tony Sidiku.
Still elevated fire risk today because we could still see another burst of strong winds through the afternoon, so red flag warnings remain in effect.
Wildfires are so large, giving off so much smoke, the burn is now visible from space. Nearly 30,000 acres have been scorched. A national goodbye for the nation's 39th president, Jimmy Carter, winds down this morning. Correspondent Jared Hill is in Washington.
The public viewing ends at the Capitol this morning, when Carter's casket will be taken just a few miles away to the National Cathedral for a state funeral. President Biden will deliver one of the eulogies. Roughly 3,000 people are expected to attend the service for President Carter.
The Supreme Court Justice explaining a phone call this week from the president-elect.
Supreme Court Justice Samuel Alito says he spoke with President-elect Donald Trump about a former law clerk the day before Trump went to the high court in a push to delay sentencing in his so-called hush money filing. Justice Alito says it was regarding former clerk William Levy's qualifications to serve in a government position, and they did not discuss the upcoming emergency motion or any other court matters. Jennifer Kuiper, CBS News.
People in Richmond, Virginia will have to make do with boiled and bottled water for at least another day. City officials say it'll take until tomorrow at the earliest to fix a treatment plant damaged by a winter storm Monday. Tanya Martin can't wait.
So that I can flush toilets, bathe, wash dishes at home.
Markets close this National Day of Mourning for President Carter. This is CBS News.
Nothing makes a gathering great like Eggland's Best eggs. They're just so delicious, with better nutrition, too. For us, it's eggs any style, as long as they're the best. Eggland's Best.
Join us live every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Playmakers, brought to you by Quality Plus Printing. Call in with your sports thoughts and feelings only on WFHR.
The Packers prepare for Philly. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Green Bay Packers face the Eagles in Philadelphia Sunday in the wild card playoffs. The Eagles have one of the top-ranked defenses in the league under coordinator Vic Fangio. I asked Matt LaFleur what makes them so tough.
You just don't see a whole lot of open space, a lot of gotcha plays. You're going to have to earn it, because if they get you in third and long, it's a nightmare.
College basketball, two of the Badgers men's team dealing with injuries. Max Klesmet in a walking boot after injuring his right ankle. Nolan Winter, able to practice despite suffering a deep cut to his finger the other night. Wisconsin hosts Minnesota Friday night. NBA, the Bucks with a 121-105 blowout over the Spurs. A.J. Green with 14 points asked, how do you defend 7'3" Victor Wembanyama?
Just be physical and crawl up under him, try to make him uncomfortable, stab at the dribble. That's what coaches wanted us to do, and I think that's how you got to try and guard them.
That's the Bucks' A.J. Green. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabba. Award show season is not only fun if you like award shows, it also can give you excellent suggestions of what you should be watching. On the heels of Sunday night's Golden Globes ceremony, the Screen Actors Guild just announced their nominations. Leading the way in the film category was Wicked with 5 nominations. Not too far behind with 4 nominations was A Complete Unknown, the Bob Dylan biopic. Let's do a deep dive. One of the cool things about the SAG Awards is that they recognize entire ensembles when it comes to cast. A Complete Unknown and Wicked are both nominated in the category, in addition to Conclave, Anora, and Emilia Perez. Typically, when the movie wins for ensemble cast at the SAG Awards, it more often than not results in a Best Picture win at, wait for it, the Oscars. Cast ensemble has been a category at the SAG Awards since 1995, and Variety reports that in 30 years, only four films have won Best Picture at the Oscars that didn't win for Best Ensemble at the SAG Awards. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Some sunshine this morning. It's going to become mostly cloudy by later this afternoon. Our high today, 25. Tonight, light snow likely. It's not going to be much. A dusting at best. Our low, 16. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun, 24. Keeping an eye on the possibility of more light snow by Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Temperature now, 6.
Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, Matt and Aaron Ayers, Greg Bach gives us his popcorn pick of the week. Mike Clemens joins for a Packers update, and we talk poetry with James Roberts of the Wisconsin Fellowship of Poets.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8. Locally grown radio, WFHR.
All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Breitloh.
And good morning. Welcome back to Up North News Radio, unabashedly Wisconsin, and brought to you by Courier Newsroom and carried by our friends here on the Civic Media Radio Network. It is 7:06. On this Thursday morning, January 9th, 2025. It's so nice to have you along. Coming up in this half hour, we're going to talk to our friend Ruth Khanna from the Wisconsin Examiner a bit about the opening of the legislative session, a bit about the spring election races for state superintendent and for a seat on the state Supreme Court. She wrote a bit about what the conservative Supreme Court candidate Brad Schimmel had to say about the January 6th defendants. We'll also talk about her book Milked, which you've heard me talk about repeatedly, about the role of migrant workers on Wisconsin dairy farms, and she has an update on that. Then in our second hour, we will be talking both to the Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer and to new state Senator Sarah Kieski. It'll be part of a new segment that we do on Thursdays where we'll try to talk to one senator and one assembly rep about what's happening under the Capitol Dome on that particular week so that you know what your legislators are up to in Madison. But first, before we get to all that, meteorologist Brittany Merlot joins us now, where, again, we're here in the single digits in many places across Wisconsin. Not much for snow. And Rob from Tigerton asks, does our snow queen Brittany have some awesome news for snow on Sunday? Well, I mean, no pressure there, Brittany. What you got?
I love that Greg is shaking his head. He's like, no, please, no more. But yes, we've got two shots of some light snowfall. Sunday looks much better than the one moving in tonight and through early tomorrow morning. So what we've got going on here is high pressure still taking place. Clear and cold conditions this morning. Temperatures range from 2 below in Oconto to 16 degrees is the warmest temperature, and that's actually in Superior and Ashland. So they're hanging on to the warmth with a little bit of wind movement there. Otherwise, we are looking at clouds increasing throughout the day. So some sunshine to start, becoming cloudy and warmer. Highs will make it to the mid-20s today out ahead of this system that's moving in. So what this system is actually a part of the big one that's heading down to the south, bringing plenty of ice and snowfall from Dallas all the way to Nashville. But here for us, we're just looking at about a trace to a half an inch of snowfall. So this will push in overnight tonight, mainly around midnight. But of course, far northwest areas could see this after 6 o'clock this evening. So that'll continue overnight. We could be waking up to some slippery spots in the morning, but a few flurries flying will wind down by the afternoon. We'll continue to stay in those mid-20s. And then, of course, some sunshine for Saturday, but we do have another system headed our way for Sunday, and that could bring a widespread 1 to 3 inches, with places in the North Woods looking at 2 to 4.
Well, it's not 2 to 4 feet, but, you know, at this point, we're going to take what we can get, right?
Exactly.
Okay. From Robin Tigerton, who says, wait a minute. I want to get it, put it in the right order. He gives us today's report in multiple parts on YouTube. Good morning from Tigerton. It's clear and 2 above. At least the winds are light. Yesterday, he went to Shawano for a doctor's appointment for his ears. He took some pictures on the way home around sunset time. And we mentioned Van Halen's 1984 album. And when he thinks of Jump, he still jams to that song today, as do we all, Rob. And he also adds prayers to the people in the Los Angeles area from the fire. And as we mentioned earlier, he is hoping for some snow on Sunday. So, Rob, yes, we always appreciate those daily reports.
Nice. Those fires out west are so, so scary. Those Santa Ana winds, like, this is the season for them. And then they're just pushing with that 60-mile-per-hour winds and that dry air coming off the inland area. It's scary stuff out there.
It really is. I mean, the and again, this is a place that's used to fires. But when you now you add an honest-to-goodness wind storm on top of it, it just makes the tragedy so much more widespread. Brittany, thanks. We will get that weekend forecast from you tomorrow. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
All right. Remember, along the way, if you'd like to join us, we are always here for you with your calls and texts, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. You can use the Civic Media app to call or text the show, or you can put a comment on Facebook or YouTube. That would be the Up North News YouTube page, the Up North News Facebook page, or the Civic Media Facebook page. Let's bring in Ruth Conniff, editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner, also author of the book Milked, about dairy farming in Wisconsin with migrant labor. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. But first, let's talk about what all is getting going in Madison, from the legislature to election races. Ruth Conniff, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thanks.
Yeah, Happy New Year. Nice to see you. And again, for folks who aren't reading it regularly, get yourself over to WisconsinExaminer.com and read what this honest-to-God all-star staff writes every day that you work with. And we appreciate all you do. Holiday break's over.
Yeah.
In a big way. Boy, between the legislature and elections, you guys have to shake off the holiday rust real quick, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I think it's nice to be back with the whole staff, and we are ready for the new year. Mm-hmm. But it was nice to take a little slow time during the holidays.
So what caught my eye was, you know, you write editorial columns from time to time, as I do for Up North News, WI.com. And you noted that there's going to be this state Supreme Court race. And we know that Dane County Judge Susan Crawford is running, as is Scott Walker's former Attorney General Brad Schimmel. And with the January 6th, day of infamy around us, something caught your ear about what Brad Schimmel had to say about the January 6th defendants that you felt compelled to write about. Do you want to sum that up for us?
Yeah, I wrote a column on January 6th in which I considered Schimmel's appearance on the Vicki McKenna show, where he really, you know, he did a full Trump, and he talked about how the January 6th defendants never got a fair shake. I mean, people who were put in jail and, you know, committed violent acts, attacked Capitol police officers. And his justification for that, I thought, was particularly interesting, coming from somebody who wants to sit on the state Supreme Court, because he basically said our system of justice doesn't work, that prosecuting these folks, you know, who beat police officers with flagpoles, who came into the Capitol and defecated there, who were looking to kill members of Congress, that they couldn't get a fair shake because they were tried in Washington, D.C., which he said is a notoriously liberal place, and therefore would necessarily draw a liberal jury pool. And so really, not only was he, you know, jumping on board with a lot of Republicans who were initially shocked and horrified by the scenes of January 6th that we all saw unfold, but, you know, took it a step further and basically said our system of justice doesn't work, and that these people, you know, not just that he did say they were, it was political that they were prosecuted at all and sort of a stunt by the Democrats, but he even went a step further and said that our court system can't be relied on, that the results can't be relied on if they're in Washington. And I just think that that is so outrageous, coming from someone who claims that he's going to be a fair and impartial judge, and also who attacks other people who have run for the state Supreme Court in Wisconsin for somehow being political. Of course, only the Democratic supported candidates, only the liberals are political in his view. and the conservatives are not. But here's a guy who's been deeply, deeply partisan for his entire career, who, as we now know, because of a New York Times investigation, was part of a widespread effort, a nationwide effort by Christian conservative lawyers to overturn Roe and to, you know, promote cases that could challenge Roe and get the, you know, Donald Trump appointees on the Supreme Court to agree with them that that precedent didn't apply long before anyone was prepared for that. You know, starting in 2016, Schimmel and his staff, especially Mika Seelen, who, you know, worked with him at the time at the Department of Justice, were going to conferences and participating in discussions of how to get rid of Roe v. Wade. So, you know, the whole idea that this guy is neutral is ridiculous. But this, I thought, was particularly egregious, this, you know, getting on board with the idea that the January 6th defendants should never have been prosecuted in the first place and couldn't have been fairly tried.
And essentially what he's saying is that he believes the insurrectionists deserve special treatment rather than being treated as any other criminal would, who would, you know, try to break into the U.S. Capitol and you know, the mayhem that was caused, that there should be something special about them instead. He's going to have to talk about that. He's going to be asked about the, you know, the efforts that led to the overturning of Roe. And as Joe Zepecki mentioned in our last hour, of course, under Schimmel, we had the long delays in processing rape kits. So there is definitely a record that he will be asked about repeatedly, I would assume, between now and April 1st.
Yeah, I think, you know, as people tune in, of course, state Supreme Court cases, which used to be sleepy affairs, are really high stakes in Wisconsin now. But I think people, you know, are just beginning to even think about this race.
Yeah, and look, there's going to be plenty to talk about with Judge Crawford as well, with Act 10. But here's my own personal peeve about this, is that state Supreme Court races and attorneys general races almost always turn into these law and order things, as if justices and attorney generals are in court every day deciding that they will or will not prosecute murderers, when that really distorts the real role of these positions. And the role of a Supreme Court justice has very little to do with day-to-day prosecution of crime. But I imagine we're going to get a lot of that talk again with this race, Ruth.
Yes, and it's very disingenuous, because a lot of times the lobby groups that put up ads that focus on law and order have completely different interests before the court. They want deregulation. I mean, we saw that as money became such a huge part of our state Supreme Court races, and it looks like we are now on track to break all records for this latest race. You know, it's an arms race among outside groups pouring money into each of these candidates. And you know, when Michael Gableman was running, when things really got bad in Wisconsin, when we made the national news because it was such a dirty campaign, pouring money into dishonest ads that smeared his opponent, Louis Butler, the first African-American justice who he unseated to win that race, that was when the floodgates opened the widest that so far, when we became the highest spending state in the nation on these races. And a lot of the ads focused specifically on law and order. There was a Willie Horton type ad accusing Butler of, you know, setting violent criminals free when he was a public defender. But the people behind those ads were school choice lobbyists, and they were lobbyists for deregulation of industry. They didn't care about law and order. They just used it in the race.
Exactly. Same way that we saw in the presidential race, attacking Greenland and the Panama Canal have nothing to do with the price of eggs and the other things you heard about during the campaign. We're talking to Ruth Conniff, the editor-in-chief of the Wisconsin Examiner. We're going to pause here and continue our visit, and then we will talk with Assembly Democratic Leader Greta Neubauer and new State Senator Sarah Kieske. This is Up North News Radio, live from Chippewa Falls on the Civic Media Radio Network. You can sign up for our newsletter at upnorthnewswi.com. We'll be back in a bit.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Have you made New Year's resolutions such as exercising more or learning a new skill? Why not add some financial resolutions? For starters, try to reduce your debt load. You'll improve your cash flow and have more to invest. See whether you can boost your pre-tax contributions to your traditional IRA and 401k. Once you're 50, you can even make catch-up contributions. If you have an education goal, consider investing in a tax-advantaged 529 education savings plan. Also, try to build an emergency fund containing up to 6 months' worth of living expenses, with the money kept in a liquid, low risk account. Finally, even if you're relatively young, it's good to have your estate plans in order. And if you've already created these plans, you may want to review them, especially if you've had changes in your family situation involving marriage, divorce, or birth of children or grandchildren. You may not be able to tackle all these resolutions in 2025, but by addressing as many of them as possible, you can make progress towards your goals and set yourself on a positive course for the future. This is Clay Kanoki, your Edward Jones Financial Advisor, at 715-421-0958. Member SIPC.
Hey, it's family time at Chula Vista with the right kind of fun for everyone. Wisconsin's most complete resort experience has everything you want. Fine-tuned for 70 years by four generations of the Kaminsky family. Chula Vista can be easygoing with colorful scenic river walks, a rejuvenating spa visit, relaxing at outdoor fire pits, or you can go all out in 80,000 square feet of indoor water park and outdoors with cross-country skiing, sledding, and snowshoeing. Dining comes any way you like it, from pizza to Wisconsin's number one ranked steakhouse. More than 600 guest rooms to choose from with $10 million in updates. Chula Vista, everything you've been wanting, all right here on site. Check it out at ChulaVistaResort.com.
Discover Chula's Winter Wonderland. Miles of freshly groomed trails, skiing, sledding, snowshoeing. Check out bonus gift cards at ChulaVistaResort.com.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
Singer Joan Baez is 84 years old today. Welcome back to Up North News Radio at 7:22 on this Thursday morning. January 9th, the Bucks beat the San Antonio Spurs last night 121-105. Damian Lillard had 26 points, Giannis 25, Brooke Lopez 22. They will play again tomorrow night in Orlando. And the Badger men's basketball team is going to be playing the Minnesota Gophers tomorrow. Coverage begins at 5 o'clock on Civic Media stations in Amory, Wisconsin Rapids, Racine, Kenosha, Richland Center, and the Civic Media app. Head over to civicmedia.us to learn more. We're visiting with Ruth Conniff from the Wisconsin Examiner this morning, and we've been talking about the state Supreme Court race. You can find her coverage of that and everything else her team does at wisconsinexaminer.com. Let me touch briefly on the race for state superintendent, because there will now be three candidates in that race. There's the incumbent state superintendent, Jill Underley. There is also going to be Jeff Wright, who is also a progressive, as is Superintendent Underley. And then there is Brittany Kinzer, who has described herself, I believe, as a blue dog Democrat. It's a little unusual to have three people in the race like this, so there will be a primary on February 18th to find out the top two vote getters that go on April 1st. It just seems like an unusual circumstance, Ruth, to have three either Democrats or progressives or lean progressive people in there. Does that tell us anything about what we can expect from this race between now and February 18th, at least?
Well, I would just like to say that there are not three progressives in this race.
There you go. And that deals with the description of blue dog Democrat, which I have taken issue with for many years now, shall we say.
Yeah, blue dog Democrat, I mean, can mean a lot of things, including wanting to eliminate the ACA. But, you know, more importantly, the candidate who's describing herself as a blue dog Democrat has been a big booster of school choice for a long time. And in Wisconsin, the existential issue for public schools is school privatization and the increasing degree to which we are trying to fund two school systems, one public and one private. She is a big advocate for the expansion of the private schools that receive public funds. So I would say that separates her, you know, pretty distinctly from Underley and from Wright. Wright's challenge to Underley kind of came out of nowhere at first. You know, the state Democratic Party has supported Underley. Evers, I went to his New Year's press conference where he was notably tepid in his description of Underley and refused to support anybody in the race. So there is some love lost there, apparently. And I think it has to do with the change in reading scores and the way that the state measures them and the fact that DPI went in a direction that Evers himself did not agree with. And, you know, I think maybe there was some lack of communication between the governor and the superintendent. So, you know, there's some rumbling there. I think Underly is still the favorite. She's the incumbent. People know who she is. Jeff Wright is a superintendent from Sauk Prairie. People don't know a whole lot about him. And I, you know, I don't think that we're about to elect a school choice superintendent, but, you know, it could happen in Wisconsin, especially when you've got, you know, the race splitting three ways. By February, though, it seems unlikely that Brittany Kinzer or Jeff Wright is going to have enough name recognition, but we don't know.
No, especially when you've got also that race for state Supreme Court and now quite likely a constitutional amendment for voter ID that's being discussed in the legislature this week. Before I run out of time, though, I want to ask you to follow up on your amazing book, Milked, about Mexican laborers across Wisconsin dairy farms and the farmers who support them, including farmers who frankly have and probably did again vote for Donald Trump. It's such a fascinating, I'll use the word disconnect, but not in an entirely negative way. I think you really have to read more of Ruth's writing to get it. But I wanted to follow up on it. And you say you're going to be making another trip down to Mexico, the kind of you were living down there for a time that kind of prompted this book in the first place.
Yeah, when I went to Mexico for a year with my family, I read an article in the Wisconsin State Journal, Wisconsin Watch story, that was about a family that was leaving during the Trump administration. They didn't want to, you know, have their family separated. Their kids were born in this country and they were afraid of being deported. So I followed that family in Mexico. I went and interviewed them there, and I interviewed a bunch of other farmers and workers. And I just developed this book about this relationship because it is better known now. It was not well known then that 70% of the workforce on Wisconsin dairy farms, I say 80% in my book, it's somewhere between 60 and 90, but 70, according to the UW's latest survey, are immigrants. There is no such thing as a year-round visa for low-skilled farm work. So immigrant workforce on Wisconsin dairy farms is undocumented. And at the same time, you know, it is a very Republican, very Trump-voting part of the state where these farms are. And so it is an interesting relationship. It's a years-long relationship. And, you know, I talk about in my book sort of the global economic forces that threw these two groups of rural people together, and they have found they have something in common. They have a similar agrarian past, and they are, you know, really hardworking folks who are surviving, doing farm work, working side by side. And now we have this threat of mass deportation. So I am going to go on a trip with the farmers to Mexico through this nonprofit group, Puentes Bridges, that takes a group of farmers every year to meet the families of their workers in southern Mexico, and they see the homes and businesses that their workers have built with the money they made milking cows up here. So I'm going to go on the trip at the end of this month. I have done some reporting from Western Wisconsin that I hope is coming out this week or early next week, sort of about how people continue to feel pretty far away from all that national political rhetoric, that a lot of these workers have taken on so much risk to get here and so much financial debt to, you know, pay for an illegal border crossing, that the political rhetoric does not seem like the scariest thing they've faced. And so in a lot of ways, both the farmers and the workers are sort of just hoping to get through, and that the mass deportation threat is not going to touch rural Wisconsin.
But although I certainly fear those farmers will be among a chorus of voices around the country that said, wait, I thought he was going to get rid of the bad immigrants. I like my workers. And I think some of them are in for a rude awakening, but Ruth will continue to follow this, write about it at the Wisconsin Examiner, wisconsinexaminer.com, and get her book Milked as well to learn much more about the issue. Ruth Conniff, it's so great to see you. Thank you again for the visit. Look forward to talking to members of your team again in the new year. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Pat.
All right. Nice to have you here. When we come back, we'll talk to new state senator Sarah Kieski, and we will also talk to Assembly Democratic leader Greta Neubauer as a new session of the Wisconsin legislature gets underway. All that coming up in just a bit, live from Lake Wasota on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Pat Kreitlow.
A couple of light years ago, heading straight for a fall.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
Well, Wisconsin's got a brand new Fairest of the Fairs. I'm Pam Yonke with a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news on a Thursday. She hails from Northeast Wisconsin and we'll introduce her to you next.
Giving back, it's at the heart of the Wisconsin farmer, and it starts with supporting the backbones of our community. That's why the Wisconsin Soybean Marketing Board invests in soy foam for our firefighters. Soy foam TF1122 is the first and only firefighting foam green screen certified at the gold level. As a PFAS-free firefighting foam, it's safe for you and the environment. A safe future for your community. Thanks to your soy checkoff. Learn more at wisoybean.org.
You're not in the habit of leaving yield in the field. You don't let the acres hold out on you. No bushel of corn gets left behind. That's why you choose top performers like DeKalb brand VT4 Pro with RNAi technology. It's got gigantic performance potential with the research to prove it. And five modes of action to protect against pests. Ready to go for the yield? Talk to your DeKalb representative. Never settle. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
33 contestants were vying to be Wisconsin's Fair Ambassador, the selected Fairest of the Fair 2025, 21-year-old Megan Salentine from Kewaunee County. She is the daughter of Josh and Jenny Salentine of Luxembourg. She is currently a student at St. Norbert College, majoring in elementary education and language arts. She explains her passion for Wisconsin fairs.
I was a 4-H member for years and years. I began as a clover bud as a kindergartner and began exhibiting at my local fair, just with the projects in the exhibit hall, cake decorating, sewing, rubber stamping. And from there, I fell in love with the County Fair Week and what it brings. So then I became a swine and dairy exhibitor and got to spend wonderful days at my county fair. As Kewaunee County Fairist, I got to really represent what my county is about, the exciting things that we do at the fair to bring the community together, to congratulate the exhibitors on their wonderful achievements throughout Fair Week, and bring a wonderful fair family together.
That's 21-year-old Megan Salentine representing Kewaunee County, now your 2025 Fairest of the Fairs. Rounding out the top five candidates last night included Maria Lee representing Ozaukee County, Aubrey Bailing representing Wisconsin Valley Fair, Tori Havlick representing Waupaca County Fair, Sammy Rake representing Lodi Agricultural Fair, and Fia Kam representing St. Croix County Fair. You can see more from last evening's events. Go to Fabulous Farm Babe or Midwest Farm Report on Facebook, and you'll see all the photos from the evening's events. That's a quick update on what's happening in food and farming news for a Thursday. Sign up for our daily e-newsletter at MidwestFarmReport.com. I'm Pam Yonke.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
Some sunshine this morning. It's going to become mostly cloudy by later this afternoon. Our high today, 25. Tonight, light snow likely. It's not going to be much. A dusting at best. Our low, 16. Tomorrow, a mix of clouds and sun, 24. Keeping an eye on the possibility of more light snow by Sunday. I'm meteorologist Sean Cable.
Outside now, it's 4 above.
The Badgers.
Beats Max, fakes the three, takes the three. Left side, yes, sir.
Play.
Pivots, fades, flips, good again. Just outside the left elbow.
Here.
Goes up, got it. With the right hand, it counts on a foul.
This is your radio home for Wisconsin Badger basketball.
Brought to you by 8th Street Auto, Econ Electric, and Johnson & Sons Chrysler Jeep. Listen on 97.5 FM, 1320 AM WFHR, streaming live on the Civic Media app.
Matt LePay for Steinhoffels. Since 1934, Steinhoffels has been Wisconsin's furniture and mattress destination for quality, selection, and service. Steinhoffels is a proud partner of Wisconsin Athletics. During the weekend of January 10th through the 12th, visit any Wisconsin Steinhoffels store, spend $1,999 or more, and get a $100 gift card to the University Bookstore to get the latest Badgers gear and apparel. Relax, it's Steinhoffels.
Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody, join us next time as we'll take a look at what's to come in the 119th Congress. What issues are important to you and what's realistic to get done? Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Hey,
AJ McLean of the Backstreet Boys is 47 today. You can get our history lesson every morning, Monday through Friday at 6:50 here on Up North News Radio. Tomorrow on the program, we would normally talk to Kia Vakil, national correspondent for Courier Newsroom. Regular listeners know that he's based in Los Angeles, and things are very crazy there right now and tragic. And Kia is among those who has had to evacuate. So Kia will not be able to join us tomorrow. A couple of our other Courier Newsroom colleagues will be joining me, including Isabel Swasson from Iowa Starting Line, who writes for the Courier Newsroom national team. And also my colleague in North Carolina, Billy Ball, from the Cardinal and Pine. And we've talked briefly about this, but I'm going to ask Billy more about how the North Carolina Supreme Court election may be on the verge of getting hijacked by conservatives and a Trump-appointed judge who may be poised to throw out tens of thousands of legal votes on a technicality so that the conservative candidate could win a seat on the North Carolina Supreme Court, a real true case of election theft in the making. And we'll talk about that tomorrow morning at 6:30 here on Up North News Radio. But right now, I'm very thrilled to be joined by the Assembly Democratic leader, Greta Neubauer of the Racine area, and brand new state senator, Sarah Kieske of Lodi. Ladies, good morning.
Good morning.
So nice to have both of you here. We're going to spend a lot of our Thursdays, we hope, talking to a pair of legislators, one from the Senate, one from the Assembly. It's my way of bridging the divide, not between Republican and Democrat, but between Senate and Assembly. Because as we know, and Greta, you've been in the legislature long enough to know that sometimes caucuses of the same party between the Assembly and the Senate could use a little bridging now and then, a little more togetherness, wouldn't you say?
Oh, we're getting along great, Pat.
It's day four.
We're ready to go.
How many times I got accused of having senitude when by Assembly members? It's a word down there in the Capitol, believe me.
Watch out, Sarah. Watch out.
Yep. That's right.
Things to know.
Sarah, congratulations on your win. It was fun talking to you a couple of times as a candidate. How are things so far this first week?
Well, thanks so much for having me on here. I'm so excited. I am over the moon. It's really hard to describe how exciting this is, how grateful I am to be here, how eager I am to get to work, and how proud I am to be representing my district.
And Representative Neubauer, do you have a caucus that now has a majority of new members?
Yes, we do. 23 new members, 22 continuing members.
That's really something.
But that's
got to be exciting in its own way for the veterans, as you would say, to see all of these new faces, all of this new blood. It's not that you don't miss the folks who aren't there anymore, but this has got to be kind of a rush for you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, we, of course, had some great folks who chose to retire this year, went on to run for other things. And we have 23 new people who are so excited to be in the legislature. They worked really hard in primaries, in tough purple districts, in many cases, to get here. They come from all parts of the state. They have diverse professional, personal backgrounds, bring great experience, and we're just thrilled to have them joining, especially in a new era where the margins have tightened, right, between Democrats and Republicans in the Assembly and Senate, and we're really hoping for a shift in the way things work in the Capitol.
Well, that would sure be nice, but that was certainly not the rhetoric that we heard from Speaker Robin Voss and from Senate Republican Leader Devin Lemahieu, whose opening speeches were extremely partisan, in my view. But I think they're trying to help unify a smaller Republican majority. But as I understand correctly, Leader Neubauer, even though the Republicans no longer have near super majorities in the Assembly and in the Senate, am I hearing right that they're trying to basically give themselves super majorities on committees?
Yes. So they removed a number of committee positions for Assembly Democrats going into this year. That was, of course, extremely disappointing because we picked up 10 seats and somehow have less spots on most of the important committees going into this year. Speaker Voss would like things to stay the same. He's enjoyed the power that he's had under the gerrymander, and I think he is going to continue to act like he has 2/3 almost of the chamber until he can't. Yeah. And I do think that his members are going to start pushing back if they refuse to take up popular policy and if they keep acting like they don't need to listen to voters from both sides of the aisle.
Right. And that no doubt led to what the governor proposed at the start of the week with citizen initiative and referendum for constitutional amendments. And we may get back to that in this segment. But Senator Chieske, let me ask you a bit about your own goals, priorities, expectations. Now that, you know, the rush of the inauguration is past, what is it that you'd like to get down to work and do?
Well, I'll say that after working so hard to get elected, it has been a gap of time, these 2 months, where I've just been so eager to get in and to get to work. And so I couldn't be more excited to have our first session day yesterday. And I will continue to advocate for the things that have been my priorities along the campaign trail, including K-12, public education, our rural communities, and of course, mental health, because I'm a mental health provider, and that's been a primary focus of mine for my whole adult life. I've been honored to be put on the committees for mental health, substance abuse, and families, for agriculture, and for education. And so my goal is to be a really active member on each of those committees, to learn all I can, and to be a voice of hopefully some compromise, some change, and some advocacy for things that we really need to see happen and that we heard at each of the doors. Oftentimes, one of these issues was commonplace when I worked all across the district.
I was going to say, it wasn't just, if you weren't hearing about a specific issue, you were hearing the specific message of working together better, I'm sure.
Oh, constantly. I mean, one of the things that was pivotal for people that wanted to vote, they wanted to see a change. They wanted to see people work together. They wanted to see us get things done. And I'll be honest, that's one of the things that, I've lived my life being very proactive. And I've been a busy person. I have 6 kids. I've managed jobs, multiple jobs at the same time. And so all I want to do is be productive. And it's been disappointing a bit to see some of the barriers to that productivity, starting out even including like the schedule that we were supposed to vote in. I voted against because we don't work nearly enough in the second year of our term because of the upcoming elections each 2 years. And so I'm hopeful, again, to get to work and to be listening to and fulfilling my obligation to my constituents, which is work hard, work together, get things done.
Exactly. The working hard part appeared to be missing from that schedule, Representative Neubauer, that so many Democrats did vote against it because we have joked in past years, in 2024, 2022, 2020, about Republicans putting the legislature on roughly a 9-month paid vacation. They just went ahead and baked that into the calendar for 2026, didn't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a member who has served in the assembly for quite some time, Chris Nicky, who reminded us that they used to legislate into May. And since I've been here, it's pretty much February. We're done with our work in the Capitol and everybody is back home campaigning. And really, that's not how the legislature is supposed to work. We're paid full time for 2 years. And often at the end of session in February, we're rushing through over 100 bills, not able to really give them real consideration. And of course, there are new challenges that come up. So we should work harder. We should work more days. We should work longer into the second year. We got elected to do a job and we should do it.
Yeah. Because again, it's a full-time salary. And yet, From the cuts that we played in our last hour, from Representative Snodgrass, from Senator Smith, from Senator Royce, what they chose to work on for day two and day three was ramming through this constitutional amendment on voter ID. So we already heard a couple of sound bites about it, Representative Neubauer, but I want you to weigh in as well that of all the things that Republicans could have worked on, this was one of the first things on the docket.
Yeah, you know, I'll note, Sarah just mentioned, there are a lot of issues that came up on the campaign trail. Enact on doors in my own district, enact on doors in every competitive assembly district over the last year. And you know what I didn't hear one time? I want you to take that state law on voter ID and put that into the Wisconsin Constitution. I heard about addressing costs for working families, about education, the environment, supporting our kids and our elderly folks, right? There are a lot of important issues that the people of Wisconsin have asked us to address. This is just not one of them.
No, and I understand the timeline. They want to rush this through and get this on the April ballot when there's also the state Supreme Court election, the state superintendent election, and everything else. But again, it just says so much about the priorities. Senator Kieske, let me ask you, and it's one thing to talk to leadership, and you understand why leadership, sets the agendas that they set. But then there's the rank and file members, and I wonder if already in these early phases, have you struck up some conversations? I won't say friendships because it's still early, but some conversations with some of your Republican colleagues that you think might lead to some of these, bipartisan initiatives.
Well, let me say I have introduced myself to them and extended a hand. I also had a meeting with the assembly member that is a Republican in my district, along with, of course, knowing the other two assembly members that are Democrats and working well with them. His name is Tony Kurtz, and we had a meeting in my office. Again, really wanting to start off with the foot of bipartisanship, asking that he and I can work together. We have the same constituents. We want to do good work. I believe that that's why he's in the legislature too. And so I ask that whatever his priorities are, share them with me. Let's make sure that we work together as much as we possibly can. I understand we will disagree on some things, but we certainly can agree on much more than we disagree on. And my hope is that he takes me at my word and will work really hard to keep our offices in connection.
You've certainly made the effort, and Greta, I know the same happens over on the assembly side, but it feels different. It does not feel as congenial as it was in days gone by. I'm not asking you to psychoanalyze some of your colleagues, but I think you share that assessment that there's definitely room for improvement in terms of improved relations across the aisle, shall we say.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the reality is that we just picked up a lot of seats, right? We got fair maps in Wisconsin, which many of us have been working on for a decade. And it changed things in the legislature. We've got a lot more people who are in very competitive districts, both Democrats and Republicans, who have to look over both shoulders, be responsive to their constituents. Republicans aren't really happy about this new reality. I hope that they will settle in. I hope that they will remember that they are sent here by their constituents to work hard on their behalf and to get things done, right, to address the pressing challenges facing the state of Wisconsin. But I think everyone is getting used to a new status quo of a closer legislature, a more accountable legislature, and not everybody's happy about that.
No, but there are things that you're going to have to jump into with the budget. There's certainly going to be discussion about a tax cut, how you tailor it exactly to the middle class. Maybe that can be a win-win. Maybe not so much Badger Care Medicaid expansion, but maybe at least postpartum expansion.
One would hope.
Maybe special education funding, that disparity between voucher mm-hmm. schools and public schools. What we're trying to let people know is there's definitely room there for some win-wins if some more of your colleagues are willing to not march in lockstep.
Absolutely. And we've seen that, right? We've seen those Republican members out on the campaign trail talking about those same issues. My opponent had postpartum on a mailer. So I hope that those members will push back against their leadership and will make clear that their constituents want them to pass popular policy that will improve their lives.
Well, keep the welcome mat out for them, that they're always welcome to talk with you and potentially vote with you on things that, again, the vast majority of Wisconsinites want. Democratic leader Greta Neubauer from the Assembly, new state Senator Sarah Kieske, thank you both so much. Great to talk to you. Take care now.
Thank you.
All right. When we come back, we'll wrap things up with Luke Mathers here on Up North News Radio next.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR.
Join Lou Rugani for the Music of the Stars every Sunday morning from 7 a.m. until noon. Lou brings back the nostalgia from the golden age of radio with the music, drama, and comedy shows that made radio magic. Music of the Stars is sponsored by Lakeland Care, providing personalized support that aims to improve quality of life and maintain independence for elders and those with disabilities. It's the Music of the Stars, Sunday at 7 on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
Here's to a Wisconsin winter you will always remember. To playing outdoors in a winter wonderland. Here's to cozying up around the fire and holding someone close. And to staying downtown, where the food scene makes your heart sing. And to celebrating moments frozen in time. Here's to those who Wisconsin. Plan your winter getaway at TravelWisconsin.com. Sponsored by Travel Wisconsin.
Hey there, it's Carrie Joy with your Work Money Minute. On my YouTube channel, I recently talked to Amanda Klayman, a financial therapist and an all-around excellent person. We talked about how to reduce money anxiety, and her advice was really helpful. She said, unless we have a time to do money, we don't have a time to not do money. Meaning, if we set aside some time to think about and manage our money, it lets our brain stop worrying about money all the time. For example, I have a monthly money meeting with myself, which lowers my money anxiety and helps keep me on top of my finances. If you don't already, set and keep that money meeting with yourself. It'll help your wallet and your peace of mind. Remember what Amanda said, unless you have a time to do money, you don't have a time to not do money. For more everyday money tips, check out workmoney.org. Till next time, this is Carrie Joy saying, take good care.
This is locally grown radio, WFHR.
She was looking kind of dumb with a finger and a thumb in the shape of an L on her forehead. Well, the years start coming and they don't stop 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 coming and they don't.
Luke Mathers is here, but there's actually a story by Greg Bach about this particular version of a Smash Mouth song.
So at the club,
by the way, this goes on for 10 minutes in case you're wondering. Yeah.
When at the club, when we want to be done with the evening because people are standing around talking and not drinking and buying things and keeping our lights on, please come to the Laughing Tap. And when we want to close down shop because we're not a 2 a.m. bar, we'll play this song and it'll play for about a minute and a half. And people will be like, and then they'll be like, What is this?
You can bring it back up. Yeah.
He's still going. Still
exactly. At some point, it drives you away. But anyway.
Yeah.
It takes a full 90 seconds for the patrons at the Laughing Tap
because,
to recognize
because
that.
They're sitting there with their drinks and they're talking to their friends. Yeah. And they're bopping their heads. And then the repetition starts to bore into their ear hole, and then they're like, we got to go right now. And then I start turning up louder and louder and louder.
By the way, all this in honor of Steve Harwell from Smash Mouth, the late Steve Harwell, who was born this day in 1967. Mr. Mathers, Happy New Year. How are you?
Happy New Year, Mr. Krylo. Happy New Year, Mr. Bach. Doing well. I saw Smash Mouth Bratfest. Dane County is, I believe, world's largest Bratfest over Memorial Day weekend a number of years back, and it was an interesting show. I believe he was like yelling.
That's what happened towards the end. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Again, that's when you when you die at age 56 from being a rock and roll star, there's adventure along the path here. Let's see. We've got a few comments that I wanted to share. This one from Greg. Yay, Greg W. Yay, Bucks won finally, which is going to make Mr. Mathers happy here. Two in a row.
Yeah, I was a little bummed that, yeah, it was two in a row. I was a little bummed that it was an 8:30 p.m. start last night. I'm not a big fan of the late. They were home too. They weren't even on the West Coast.
I know, but it's TV. You gotta do what TV wants. Greg also added on there. Pat and Greg, you both are looking mighty fine this morning from this blind guy's perspective.
Okay? Thanks, Greg.
Thanks. Brian on Facebook writes the no bias here from former Dem legislator Pat Kreitlow. Shh, Brian, don't out me. Nobody else knows that I was a former Democratic legislator. You caught me. You cracked the code on this. And also from Eric and Tosa on the text line about Joe Sopecki earlier saying, please stop saying voters aren't responsible for this. If we keep letting the people who elected this guy off the hook, we're never going to evolve. And on it goes about the voters. But Luke, you and I know we've talked to enough elected officials and people in Joe Sopecki's position that it's the candidates who are not going to gain any ground by saying, well, the voters are dumb or something like that. You've got to win the votes back, and calling voters dumb doesn't tend to win them back. Now, that's not to say that the voters can't be called to account. I used to get yelled at a lot at the TV station for yelling at people. You might find that hard to believe, Luke, but I used to yell at people a lot.
People on the television not talking about things I know.
And my response was always, if you don't want to be yelled at for doing something stupid, don't do something stupid. Yeah. I can have that conversation from time to time, but really, you know, Luke, from our standpoint at Civic Media, it's like, look, we could sit here all day and go, oh, you guys are dummies who voted this way. It's like, no, we've got to talk about the issues in the here and now.
We absolutely have to be talking about the issues. It is strange, though, Pat, because it seems that some people can get away with calling voters dumb. Or there's a separate set of rules for depending on which voters you're talking about. Because if Democrats talked about the middle-of-the-road moderate voters or conservative voters, the way that conservatives and Republican elected officials talk about Democratic voters, you would see people like lighting their hair on fire it is insane the double standard that exists, the way that Republican lawmakers can use cities like Milwaukee or New York or LA as political dog whistles to indicate one thing, where you all of a sudden see a different set of rules that everybody else has to
do. And that's what I think is important. What you're doing and what we're doing is you point out the double standard. We don't say, well, let's just call all rural people, you know, dumb. It's like, no. How about if we point out how wrong it is to call Milwaukee dumb or wrong? And especially
or unsafe.
If you're using it as coded language. Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. And so it's the fact that we're all dealing with different political verbiage and how we go forward talking to people in this really highly siloed media landscape.
Right.
But it is important, I think, to be talking to everybody and meeting them where they are. And so that does look differently depending on who you're talking to. And there's different standards when it comes to who's doing the talking.
Right. So if you can have a good back and forth with folks, then you're going to attract people from all parts of the spectrum to listen to you. Now, Tony notes on YouTube, it is hard to hold voters accountable when the elections are about different issues than what the politicians actually do. But again, that's what we're talking about here. We're not going to focus all day on President Trump trying to acquire Greenland. We're going to point out that he's talking about that because he's not taking action on the price of groceries and everything else, which is part of what you know, part of what we want to do on all of these shows that Mr. Mathers arranges for us, except that he appears to be stuck in traffic right now. But hopefully they let
I'm safe in a parking lot. The car isn't parked. Don't worry.
Okay.
Okay. Everybody's circling back. It's a week of circling back, and I could not be in a studio.
Okay. So you can confirm the keys to the building still work for you.
That's
okay,
correct.
they let you in. That's the important part. Mr. Mathers, thank you. Have a great day.
Always a pleasure.
Mr. Bach is back in 2 hours for Matt and Air on Air, and thanks to all of you for joining us for Up North News Radio.
Locally grown radio, WFHR. Jane, Matt, and Air, and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, next up for the Packers, they take on the Eagles. What are their chances heading into the playoffs? We talk to Paul Noonan from the Acme Packing Company. Don't miss it.
Matt and Air on Air, weekday mornings at 11.
Badger fans, the temperatures may be dropping, but the Big Ten action at the Kohl Center is just heating up. This winter, we've got an action-packed schedule of Badger men's and women's basketball and men's hockey games right here at home. Gather your friends and family, secure your seats, and create lasting memories with us at the Kohl Center. For the full Badger schedule and to purchase your tickets, visit uwbadgers.com or call 1-800-GO-BADGERS. That's uwbadgers.com or 1-800-GO-BADGERS.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app. This is locally grown radio. WFHR 1320 AM, W248DE Wisconsin Rapids, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
CBS News Special Report. A state funeral will be held at Washington's National Cathedral this morning for former President Jimmy Carter. His casket will first be transferred from the U.S. Capitol Rotunda, where he's been lying in state. CBS's Allison Keyes.
On the first note of the first hymn, the body bearer team begins moving down the steps through the ranks of the honor cordon, the special honor guard, and honorary pallbearers to the hearse.
Many luminaries will attend the service for the 39th. Correspondent Nancy Cordes from the cathedral.
Who will be here? Well, in addition to the Bidens, the Trumps, the Obamas, the Bushes, and the Clintons have all been invited as well. It'll be a rare gathering of all of the living presidents.
President Biden will deliver the eulogy. A final service and burial will take place today in Georgia. WSB's Jonathan O'Brien is in Plains.
A large white tent near the home of the former president denotes the spot where he will be buried in a private ceremony alongside his wife, Rosalynn.
CBS News Special Report. I'm Deborah.